Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Damme in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, June 20th, 2018. President Kiir and Riek Machar are in Addis for a face-to-face meeting.
I would like Riek Machar and Salva Kiir to reconcile and change the situation to the better, because right now people are suffering very badly.
And one analyst says what the two talk about in the next few hours is crucial to South Sudan's future, but they are not the only ones who have a say in the country's future.
What is important is that if this meeting does not go well, and President Kiir and former Vice President Machar walk away from each other, it's really going to call into question whether IGAD is able to move forward with some kind of peace process or peace effort.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir headed from Juba to the Ethiopian capital today, where he is expected to meet with rebel leader Riek Machar for the first time in 2 years. It's a meeting that organizers hope will revive a collapsed peace deal to end the country's civil war. The Minister for Gender, Child and Social Welfare, who's traveling with Mr. Kiir, says the two leaders will try to make compromises on the tough issues that have never been resolved. President Kiir and Machar are in the same city today for a meeting that has many South Sudanese observers and researchers paying close attention to the outcome. Casey Copeland is a senior analyst at the International Crisis Group.
What is important is that if this meeting does not go well, and President Kiir and former Vice President Machar walk away from each other, it's really going to call into question whether IGAD is able to move forward with some kind of peace process or peace effort. Now, no one has a great idea of who could take over a process other than IGAD, and if IGAD didn't succeed, why anyone else would be able to. But it really will call into question the ability of anyone to mediate a settlement to this conflict, and in that sense, it's pivotal.
The UN Security Council delayed a decision until the end of June to impose travel bans and asset freezes on 6 South Sudanese leaders accused of impeding the peace. Those options are still on the table, pending a review of the government and opposition parties' commitment to adhere to a ceasefire agreement. Copeland says the June 30th deadline makes the Kiir-Machar meeting in Addis Ababa critically important. Brian Adeba, the Enough Project's deputy director of policy, agrees, but adds the region should expand their focus beyond Kiir and Machar.
The danger with this calling of Riek Machar to Addis Ababa is the fact that the danger rests in the fact that there might be an elite deal here, an elite pact between Riek Machar and Salva Kiir. That would be counterproductive to the peace process entirely, because the conflict has evolved significantly and it involves several other actors.
Most of those other actors have joined the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, or SSO, an umbrella group of the opposition forces. They spoke out collectively in a press statement yesterday. SSO spokesman Kwaje Lasu says IGAD's latest proposal has given more positions to the Kiir administration, and the opposition will refuse to sign a deal that does not address the root causes of the conflict. Adeba says an upcoming Kiir-Machar meeting is an indication that Machar's isolation has not worked.
It's a recognition that Riek Machar is still crucial, and it debunks the assertion by the region and the government of South Sudan that Riek Machar is no longer relevant in these talks. So that's one. But again, we need to guard against an elite pact, an agreement between two leaders that overlooks the structural problems at the root of this conflict. That's the danger.
Not much is known about the outcome of today's events. IGAD has yet to release a communique with information detailing what occurred today. It's still unknown whether Kiir and Machar have, in fact, met today. Ayen Dangbior, VOA News, Washington.
Members of the South Sudan Civil Society Forum have written an open letter to President Kiir and Machar, asking the two to reconcile and meet with other opposition leaders and civil groups. The activists, including Rajab Mohandas, says the people of South Sudan have suffered for too long, and it's time for the president and Machar to show leadership by listening to the voices of the South Sudanese people who want peace.
First, the need for a peaceful and sustainable solution to end the suffering of the people. The second is a meaningful reconciliation. The third is a meeting with political leaders and civic groups, so that the meeting between the president and the chairman of the armed opposition, Dr. Riek Machar, does not only end with the two of them, but they should also meet with the political leaders who are currently in Addis, so that they reconcile among themselves, all of them, as the political leaders. They should move throughout Sudan to be able to talk to citizens that they have reached an agreement. They are committed to implement this agreement to end the suffering of the people in the country and give assurance to the people that the events that the people have witnessed over the years will not repeat themselves under their leadership again. And lastly, that they should assure the citizens honestly that the situation, especially of July 2016, will not repeat itself, so that citizens are confident that the peace agreement they will hopefully sign will bring peace to our country.
And how possible is it for these two leaders, especially President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar, to do the things the citizens are asking them? For instance, having a joint press briefing and touring South Sudan together. I'm just talking about this because rebel leader Riek Machar was chased out of Juba under gunfire. Do you think he will go back to Juba?
We were recommending and calling on them to reach an agreement and also to reconcile. Reconciliation will set the ground, a conducive environment for them to jointly convince the people of South Sudan that they have agreed to end the violence and the conflict. And this will be the ultimate measure of the peace agreement that they will sign. The revitalized agreement will not have meaning if the parties themselves, and particularly the political leaders of the various parties involved in the high-level revitalization forum, do not take lead in popularizing the agreement and assuring citizens of their commitment to implement the agreement. If they agree in Addis, they shake hands in Addis, and they come back to sit and not reach out to the citizens, it is an indication that the agreement is not an agreement that will help the people.
Given the track record of these warring parties, their past history indicates that they have never honored any agreement that they have signed. I mean, the 2015 peace agreement that collapsed is just an example. I've seen your letter is signed by close to 200 civil society groups. What are you going to do if these two leaders fail to agree?
Well, this is an important question. If they fail to agree, then it is not us doing something, but they are convincing the people of South Sudan to lose confidence in their leadership completely. And so it is up to them to decide to convince the people to have confidence in them as leaders who can deliver the country from the current situation or destroy the confidence that citizens may gain in them. And so it is not really up to us. It is not in our hands. It is in their hands in the first place to get to citizens convinced about what they are doing and to assure the world that they are committed and truly responsible to change the situation in our country.
That's Rajab Mohandas, a member of the South Sudan Civil Society Forum. He was speaking with my colleague, John Tanza, from the Rwandan capital, Kigali, earlier today. Juba residents and internally displaced people sheltering inside a UN-run camp say they hope the Kiir-Machar meeting will end the fighting in their country. Residents say they want the two leaders to overcome their differences so that peace is restored in South Sudan. And residents also say they hope the two will open their hearts and listen to one another. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
Juba resident Abor Mabiennial says she hopes the face-to-face meeting between President Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar, the first in 2 years, will help bring the two men closer together.
I would like Riek Machar and Salva Kiir to reconcile and change the situation to the better, because right now people are suffering very badly. So if they can hear our voice, that is, they make peace, and change the situation, and then later we can vote.
Nial is referring to national elections that were supposed to take place in South Sudan this year, according to a previous peace agreement signed by the warring parties. But since the cessation of hostilities agreement has not been upheld, those elections seem to be in doubt. Juba resident Dud Dao urges the two leaders to open their hearts in order to understand one another.
I'm glad actually to hear that our president has just left today to Addis Ababa to meet Dr. Riek Machar. And the only thing I could just say is for our leaders to understand themselves. First, they should understand themselves before they reach out to their demands.
Anthony Lubang, who lives in Juba's Nyakure neighborhood, says the Kiir-Machar meeting is an opportunity to address the conflict and the humanitarian situation in the country at the level of leadership. He says President Kiir and Machar should not waste this chance to end the suffering of the South Sudanese people.
For me, I hope there should be something that should come to the bottom line of the peace agreement or the peace talks, because the top two leaders who are really, if they talk and agree on something, I hope the suffering of our brothers and sisters will come to an end.
Jeremiah Guy is an internally displaced person sheltering inside the UNMISS Protection of Civilians site in Juba. He says he and other IDPs welcome the meeting of the two South Sudanese leaders and urge them to bring peace to the country once and for all.
The two leaders in this country, they have to bring peace to the citizens of South Sudan. This is the hope of all IDPs. That is the hope of the people of South Sudan. Dr. Riek Machar and Salva Kiir to sit together as the children of South Sudan.
The meeting has been held under the auspices of the Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed with the aim of bridging the major sticking points between President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's World Refugee Day. Find out what's happening in Juba when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what core value do you live by?
I do value my education a lot, because I know that with education I can go anywhere. I can explore the world. I can be whoever I want to be. I can go anywhere. I can do anything I want in life.
I live by the hardworking as the core value, and prioritizing the priorities. I like it just because when I live in hardworking, I know for sure one day I might achieve something which I need in life.
It's respect. I love to be respected, and I love to respect other people.
Okay, trust. So I love, like, someone I can trust. So I want someone to trust me, because that's the way to go. Because if you don't trust someone, then there's nothing, there's no way you can go forward with it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Today, as we said, is World Refugee Day, a day when the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, or UNHCR, raises awareness of the plight of forcibly displaced persons throughout the world, including refugees and stateless people. And though most people do not think of South Sudan as a country where people come to seek refuge, the UNHCR says it helps hundreds of thousands of refugees and asylum seekers, as many as 300,000 in South Sudan, most of whom arrive from neighboring countries. This year's theme is Now More Than Ever, We Need to Stand with Refugees. Isaac Toot, once a refugee from Sudan, is an entrepreneur, an engineer, and a former refugee who is also the founder of Running Tap, a Minnesota-based beer delivery company. Toot says he noticed a gap in the craft beer marketplace and decided he wanted to address the issue in a way that serves the communities that use the service. Toot says his experience as a refugee has helped him develop the critical thinking skills and empathy that it takes to run a successful company. And he has a special message to refugees on this World Refugee Day.
The road of getting to the U.S. has been kind of amazing, and a really long and hard road. This one full of obstacles, but looking back at it from where I sit right now, you know, you begin to realize that you were lucky, right? Like, I am blessed to be in the position I am today. I am blessed to have gone to the schools that I've gone to play the sports I have. And I think most of all, I am blessed to have gotten the support and the help that I needed from my family.
You've been described as ambitious. Your background is in engineering. You're an entrepreneur and a business owner. Where does your drive come from?
So my mom passed away right before I graduated college. And, you know, my parents have always encouraged that education is very important and, you know, it leads to all these things. And so once that happened, I've made it a goal of mine to make sure that I just keep going in life, that I put everything into everything that I do, put all my heart and effort into the goals that I set forth. And so I've been trying to do exactly that. And I think my parents, my family, and like I said before, the community have always been there every step of the way whenever you get knocked down. It's always the words from people who care that always uplifts you. And so I just take that to heart, and I just keep pushing forward for the goals that I set forth. And if I fail, hopefully I'll just keep trying and achieving whatever it is that I need to go after.
And it's a good thing that you didn't give up, because you were able to establish a company running TAP. Could you tell us a little bit more about that? And where do you hope to take your company in the future?
The company is a company that is a marketplace for craft breweries. What I'm hoping to do with it is establish it as the Amazon of craft beer, right? So breweries can go on there, they can sign up, and basically have their own little portal inside of the overall ecosystem. And people can go on there, browse, and really have a chance to get products that are better. These breweries that we partner with are people who use resources from the local communities. They go to the local gardens and get everything within the overall community. Down the road, I'm hoping to kind of build this out, and if we can do some things that I want to do here in the future, hopefully it expands and can be pretty much everywhere in the U.S.
What's your message to refugees on World Refugee Day?
This world is crazy, and there's a lot of things that happen, and I know it seems like every day is kind of a struggle, but if you just keep pushing forward and keep reaching for your goals, the world can also give a lot. Just remember, no matter where you're at, you never not have enough to give back to anyone. The more you give, the more you'll receive.
That was Isaac Took. He's founder of the company Running Tap. He was speaking to my colleague Ayan Bior yesterday from Minneapolis, Minnesota. And you might recognize that music from World Cup. And in World Cup action, Senegal scored Africa's first victory at the World Cup on Tuesday. Senegal defeated Poland 2-1 in Moscow. And Gwen Uten of VOA has reaction and more results from Tuesday's matches.
Jubilant Senegalese fans chanted, go Lions," following their win over Poland on Tuesday. Many Senegalese traveled far and wide just to watch the Lions of Taranga, like this engineer who lives in New York.
I flew all the way here for this game, and they made us so proud. I was so scared on the plane.
Senegal!
On the plane, we only had like a handful, and everybody else was Polish. In the stadium, at the corner, just a few Senegalese. Everybody else was Polish, but we did it. So we're so happy.
Senegal is the only African team so far to win a match at this World Cup tournament. And as one Senegalese fan put it, Tuesday's win is a victory for Africa. That win was made possible in part by two shocking errors on Poland's side, including a defender shot into his own net. After their loss, Polish fans struggled to come to terms with the outcome.
I'm disappointed. Yeah.
definitely we didn't accept this, what happened. The team is good, but the play was very, very bad.
Well, I feel sad. I feel sad, but on the other hand, it's a great atmosphere, great city, great stadium, a lot of Polish fans, so it was really good. But what can you do? This is football, so we'll play the best in the next two games, and we'll go further.
Poland's next group match will be played on Sunday against Colombia. Senegal plays Japan that same day. Well, Egypt suffered a disappointing loss against Russia on Tuesday, losing to the host team 3-1. The defeat came despite Mo Salah taking the field for the first time since injuring his shoulder last month. After the match, Egyptian fans slowly came to terms with the fact that their dream of taking home a World Cup title is all but over.
It was a terrible experience for Egyptians, all Egyptians.
It was really disappointing that we lost. Actually, it was like there was a lot of mistakes from the manager.
But
the players did a really, really good job.
It's really disappointing, but actually it's a huge event that Egypt finally came to participate in the World Cup after 28 years. So good luck for the Egyptian national team and the best to come.
Yeah, I thought we will play much better.
Salah's cousin.
I had high hopes we can win or can even have a draw, but it was not a good game for us.
Egyptian fans are no doubt hanging their hopes on their next match against Saudi Arabia on Monday.
Russia! Russia!
Deliriously happy Russian fans cheered and celebrated their second win in a row, with many saying it was the best match they'd ever seen. The victory virtually books the host team a spot in the round of 16 and moves them to the top of Group A with a total of 6 points. Russia will face Uruguay in that Group A match next Monday. Japanese fans wearing samurai outfits and wrapped in Japanese flags celebrated their 2-1 victory over Colombia in Tuesday's Group H match.
We know the possibility to win versus Colombia was not so high, but we believe in Japan, and then we did it! Woo! Colombia, let's go for the final stage together!
Japan beat a 10-man Colombia team because a Colombia midfielder was dealt the second fastest red card in World Cup history 3 minutes into the game for what was called a deliberate handball. Disappointed Colombian fans cited bad luck and that red card as the reason for their loss. And as I mentioned before, Colombia next plays Senegal on Thursday. Japan faces Poland that same day. And I have to mention that a video has been taking the internet by storm. Japanese and Senegalese fans were filmed not flocking the streets, but tidying up the stadium following their Tuesday matches. Both countries won their first group games and were later pictured cleaning up while celebrating. And praise is raining down on those fans. One tweet reads, "Japan made history as the first Asian team to defeat a South American team in a World Cup, but what happened after is just as impressive. A friend sent me this video of Japanese fans cleaning the stadium after the game. They actually brought the blue trash bags with them. Class act." And the official Twitter page of the FIFA World Cup said this after posting a video featuring the fans from Senegal. It says, "Senegal fans cleaning their section before leaving the stadium after their historic victory against Poland. This is the best thing you'll see tonight." This tweet from a Senegalese woman summed it up this way. "Yes, it's our culture. It's a way of saying thank you." And I'll give that the last word. For South Sudan in Focus, I'm Gwen Uten in Washington.
Finally, Zimbabwe is 40 days away from electing a president, members of parliament, and councillors. However, the opposition parties complain the Electoral Commission is biased against them and not being transparent. From Harare, reporter Kudzaye Zvinavashi reports.
Opposition parties say they have not yet received the voters' roll, even though the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, or ZEC, says it has been issued. Nkululeko Sibanda is the spokesperson of presidential candidate Nelson Chamisa, who leads the main alliance of opposition parties.
No, we have not received the voter roll. I think it's about the fact that Zach is stoking fire. Zach is destabilizing this country and the election by playing around with an important document in the process of trying to put in place a legitimate government for this country.
Linda Masarira is the spokesperson of the MDC faction led by presidential candidate Thokozani Khuphe. She says her team has also not gotten the voters' roll, but says they will collect it Thursday. She said the delay shows that ZEC is not prepared for the election. Elton Mangoma is the presidential candidate for the Coalition of Democrats, another group determined to end ZANU-PF's 38-year rule. He faults the ZEC chairperson, Priscilla Chigumba, for the problems.
We are clearly very unhappy with the way Chigumba is trying to give an impression that the voters' roll is ready, when in fact it's not ready. I have not heard any of the other opposition members who have received it. And if they have, it would be interesting to see how some will get it and others not getting it. But we are really sure that ZANU-PF already has it.
The British Embassy and the European Union Observer Mission say they have copies of the voters' roll. Some political candidates say they have gotten the rolls for the districts where they are running. But Sibanda says they want the national roll in an electronic format. Douglas Monzora is the Secretary General of the MDC faction that Nelson Chamisa leads and one of the drafters of the national constitution. He says the ZEC is breaching the constitution.
The voters' roll must be made available before the nomination of candidates, and it must be available in electronic and analyzable form. There is a breach of Section 62 of the Constitution, which entitles people to adequate information for the protection of a right.
Monzora says the right to a free and fair election enshrined in the Constitution has been infringed. He says opposition parties may take the ZEC to court. The ZEC boss, Chigumba, recently said, now that an election date has been set, nothing will delay the vote. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Get Up, Stand Up by Bob Marley.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up.
We've been listening to Bob Marley with the song Get Up, Stand Up. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'd like to hear what you think about the show. You can tell us on the web at southsudan@voanews.com or reach us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. We hope you join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Get up. Sick.